From the Christian Research Institute in Charlotte, North Carolina, this is the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. We're on the air because life and truth matter. On today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man, we pick up where we ended on our previous broadcast and present more of an episode of the Hank Unplugged podcast in which Hank talked with Pastor Rankin Wilburn, author of Union with Christ, The Way to Know and Enjoy God. Let's now rejoin Hank Hanegraaff and Pastor Wilburn in their conversation.
Something very, very interesting is this metaphor of songs. We have these songs that are playing in our minds. One of the songs is a song of radical discipleship. The other is a song of extravagant grace. But these are half-truths. Explain how these two work together. Because on the one hand, if it's radical discipleship, I mean, you get burned out just thinking about it. If it's extravagant grace, you can get into the corridor of cheap grace. And yet, union with Christ gives you the power to be a radical disciple or a radical disciple maker or a reproducing disciple maker. So if you think about the problem that you have in church, and you probably understand this better than most, Rankin, I mean, the church is bleeding out. The millennial generation is walking away from the church by the time they go to college, and most of them don't come back, quite frankly. So the church's task is to make disciples. But you think about making disciples, where does the energy come for doing that very thing unless, of course, you have union with the vine?
Exactly. Hank, you've actually put your finger on why I got so interested in this idea, this biblical theme 20 years ago. If you just stop and ask the big question, and the big question is, what is wrong? What do God's people most need to hear today? And not just God's people, what is the message that our culture most needs to hear today? And as a young seminarian, I started to see there were two different songs, and one song was what I call the song of extravagant grace, that people really need to understand that the gospel is a gospel of grace. It's not about moralism. It's not about earning and working our way to God. It's not the good people are in and the bad people are out. It's the humble are in. And it's the church really needs a message of grace. And Brennan Manning is Henry Nouwen. There's some wonderful expositors. And that's certainly, yes, that is true. But on the other hand, there were other writers just as pious and just as devout who were putting the diagnosis in a different light. Dallas Willard and years before him, Dietrich Bonhoeffer, were really saying very similar things, that what's ailing the church today is not that we don't understand grace, it's that we don't understand discipleship. And my little mind was trying to put those voices together, because we know biblically both voices are important. And we know biblically that neither should cancel the other out. And yet, experientially, we know we tend to hear one song or the other. We tend to hear one song louder than the other. And even many churches, this is just a generalization, but it's either a extravagant grace church or it's a radical discipleship church. But it's hard to find both voices. It's hard to find. And I got interested in that question. Why is that? How can I hold both of these truths together without compromising either? And that's where I want to be very careful here, Hank. I don't think there's anything original in my book. I say I'm just excavating an old forgotten treasure. And this old forgotten treasure is the gospel is union with Christ. That the good news is that we are united to Jesus, and that from, one of the old theologians put it, from Jesus flows a double grace of what he used, the biblical words of justification and sanctification, that we are declared right with God, and then we can pursue holiness as we have been declared holy. And he said, these are distinct, and yet like light and heat from the sun, they are inseparable. And when I read that, I thought, that's it. The gospel is union with Christ. It's what allows us to hold these songs together. The amazing grace that ask nothing of us to love us, and love so amazing, so divine, it demands my soul, my life, my all. That union with Christ holds those songs together.
You talk about excavating the treasure. There are some really treasured quotes. There are a couple in your book that I loved. One is where you said that the song of grace without union with Christ becomes impersonal, a cold calculus that can leave you cynical. The song of discipleship without union with Christ becomes joyless duty, a never-ending hill that can leave you exhausted. And elsewhere you write that union with Christ allows us to hear all the different voices of the Bible, the voices of grace and the voices of demand, in ways that complement one another instead of clashing with one another. And I think you're driving at that in your comments just now. So often what we do is we juxtaposition one over against the other without realizing that both are necessary.
Absolutely. We end up reading the Sermon on the Mount through the lens of Galatians, and we end up asking questions that sound crazy when we say them out loud, like, did Jesus preach the gospel? Well, you know, back to what is the gospel? And union with Christ allows us to hear the letter of James and Galatians together without subsuming one under the other. It allows us to hear both those voices. It allows us to read the Sermon on the Mount alongside Romans and say, I understand how these voices complement each other full-throatedly and don't cancel, annul, or qualify each other.
You know, when you say that, it's kind of interesting to me. In the Eastern Church, you have this sense of mystery. In the Western Church, you have this snarling logicality. And I think there's a certain amount of just relief. You can take a deep breath and say, you know what, I can live in the land of antinomy on some of these issues that people are killing each other over.
You've put your finger on another reason union with Christ has been eclipsed, is we have lost our appetite for mystery. Many of us have. And Augustine said, we have heard the fact, now let us seek the mystery. And John Calvin, talking about union with Christ, said, I myself am glad to exclaim with the apostle that I do not understand this high mystery, but rather delight in feeling my way into it. And you just don't hear many Western Christians, particularly who might claim an allegiance to John Calvin, or Augustine for that matter, using language that Augustine and Calvin were quite comfortable using.
Some of these guys you only understand through filters. I mean, I think all too often we read Luther and we're really reading Melanchthon. So you're reading Luther through a filter as opposed to experiencing Luther unadulterated.
Absolutely. Or with Calvin, you read the Calvinist. And one of the greatest expositors of union with Christ in church history was John Calvin. Calvin gets a bad rap because of the Calvinist, but as you said, it's always better to read the original. It's always better to go back and read the teacher and not the students.
How is union with Christ the doorway to communion with God? Explain how that works.
Well, I'll use two famous quotes from church history. One is from the early church father Athanasius. You quoted this earlier, but Athanasius said, God became a man that men might become sons of God. One way of understanding the biblical narrative is that the communion Adam and Eve enjoyed with God in the Garden of Eden was broken when sin entered the world, and that God, by his gracious condescension, out of his love, not out of need, but out of mercy, God became one of us to restore us to himself. And he became fully human, as the early church said, the unassumed is the unredeemed. I mean, he became fully one of us, and that's why every part of Christ's life is significant. His obedience is significant. His suffering is significant. His ascension is significant. He came all the way down, and he entered fully into human life, and he brings us up to where he and the Father are. And he has opened the door, as one of the early church fathers put it, dust now sits on the throne of glory. And this beautiful idea that we have something that even Adam and Eve never had. We will have something as well, that what we will have will be even greater than what Adam and Eve had. And so that's one idea. Union with Christ opens the door to communion with God, and that Christ, by his whole life, redeems the human condition. And his suffering and death was the climax and epitome of that, where he was crowned as our king. But the consummation that his work was not in vain was the resurrection and the ascension to the right hand of God.
Don't go away. In just a few moments, we'll rejoin Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with Pastor Rankin Wilburn. Nothing is more basic or central to knowing and enjoying God than union with Christ. It's what the Bible is all about. It's the very heart of the Christian faith and what makes the gospel good news. Yet, if you asked most people today, what is the gospel? Union with Christ is likely not what springs to mind. Something is terribly amiss. Be sure to read Rankin Wilborn's essential book, Union with Christ, The Way to Know and Enjoy God. To receive your copy, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org.
Hank Hanegraaff has dedicated his life to defending truth because truth matters. Yet an encounter with Christians in the underground church of China left Hanegraaff contemplating his Christian experience. They were experiencing something beyond truth. They were experiencing life. Truth Matters, Life Matters More by Hank Hanegraaff is two books in one. Because Truth Matters, Part 1 equips Christians to defend the essential truths of the historic Christian faith. In Part 2, Hank explains why life matters more and how we can experience the height of human existence, union with God. Prepare to move past intellectually knowing about God to experientially knowing God in Christ. To receive your copy of Truth Matters, Life Matters More, The Unexpected Beauty of an Authentic Christian Life, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches, 888-7000-CRI, or visit us at equip.org.
The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. The Christian Research Journal's primary commitment is to contend earnestly for the faith that was once for all delivered to the saints. In keeping with this commitment, the journal's mission is both evangelistic and pastoral, furthering the proclamation and defense of the historic gospel of Jesus Christ, and helping his followers distinguish between essential Christian doctrine and doctrine that is peripheral, aberrant, or heretical. In an age of subjectivism and moral relativism, may Christians ground their faith and values in the objective, reliable testimony of Holy Scripture. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today. Call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. That's equip.org. In his book, Union with Christ, Pastor Rankin Wilburn shows that our neglect of union with Christ explains the gaps between our faith and our lives. When the work of Christ for us becomes abstracted from the person of Christ within us, is it any wonder there is a chasm between our beliefs and our experiences? If we're serious about being agents of change for God's kingdom, we must first realize that we cannot be transforming unless we ourselves are being transformed. And that means putting down deep roots into the life-transforming waters of God's Spirit. Be sure to read Union with Christ, The Way to Know and Enjoy God by Rankin Wilborn. Receive your copy by calling 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or just visit online at equip.org. Let's rejoin Hank and Pastor Wilburn in their conversation.
I was thinking about something you wrote, and that is the perichoresis, the dancing circle, the interrelationships of the persons of the Trinity, and understanding our salvation as being invited into the dance. Or I like to talk about something I heard years ago about being brought into the life of the Trinity.
Yes, very biblical language. You know, John 14, verse 23, this idea of being welcomed into God's life. Jesus said, "We will love him and I will manifest myself to him." This idea of, well, again, that's why I opened the book with a quote from Dante. That is the journey of the soul. The journey of the soul is communion with God. And Dante, that would be a wonderful study to do on one of your podcasts. Dante's guides on that journey. I mean, he starts with Virgil, the epitome of classical learning, and then Beatrice, which was Dante's way of saying, knowledge won't get you all the way home. Love has to lead you to God. But at the very end, in book three of the Divine Comedy, it's Bernard of Clairvaux, who wrote a lot about union with Christ. It's Bernard who leads the pilgrim to communion with God. When I said I'm not doing anything original in this book, I mean, in some ways I'm saying we need to go back to the best thoughts of our best teachers and recover union with Christ.
I couldn't help but think about the reality. I have 12 kids, and I think you have three. Kids in our culture get so wrapped up with technology and the information overload. You just get pounded by this information, and you really don't have an opportunity to think about it. But even more to the point of what you're just saying, we no longer read these great classics that are so illuminative in our lives.
Yes. I mean, my kids are young. They're 8, 6, and 4, but I'm very interested, and apparently a lot of people are getting even more and more interested in what are we doing to ourselves with our technology. Again, technology is a great gift, but I'm one of those people who thinks we're going to look at our technology the same way we look at cigarette smoking. Like, what were we doing to ourselves? Our appetite for thinking deep thoughts, sustaining deep thoughts. To put it simply, one of the casualties of our technological innovation is our lack of depth. Depth is necessary to enjoy life with God. Not intelligence, depth is necessary to enjoy life with God.
So what's the difference between intelligence and depth?
Well, the way I put it in L.A., I think people have the wrong idea about L.A. People think some people in L.A. are shallow and superficial, and I'm sure some of that is true. But also, you know, people are highly educated, highly ambitious in L.A. They are, if they stay here, they're at the absolute top of their game. And the way I phrase it in L.A. is there is no correlation between intelligence and wisdom. If anything, there is an inverse correlation. But intelligence, as our culture narrowly defines it, says if you are smart in a certain way, you will be rewarded with a certain life, and that is the good life. But the way I phrase it in L.A. is if you saw someone sprinting down the street and they were extraordinarily fast, like Usain Bolt fast, no one would look at that person and say, wow, look how fast he is. I need to ask him about how to live. I need to ask him about how to live a good life.
Although that's exactly what we do. I mean, if you get these guys that are great basketball players, Stephen Curry,
yeah.
He played basketball with my boys, and we got to know him really well, and his dad and I are good friends. But suddenly, I mean, I've known Steph as a high schooler. Now he's a great basketball player, and all of a sudden, people are asking him about world issues. He's not prepared to answer those questions. So sometimes we do make this correlation. You run fast, you're a great basketball player, a great golfer, and now you know everything there is to know about everything.
Well, we think if you're extraordinarily talented in a certain area that our culture values, that qualifies you to speak with wisdom on how to live, which is why stars feel compelled or inclined to speak on social issues, and I don't begrudge them that. They're using their platform our culture's given them, but the oldest definition of wisdom is skill in living the good life. And my question in LA is always, according to whom? Back to this wisdom contest, who is setting the contours of what is the good and beautiful life? And is it Jesus? Is union with Christ your highest ambition? Is communion with God your highest ambition? That's the first commandment. Or are you letting the culture set your definition of success, and then you're just garnishing that with Jesus?
And that's why you get these people that have extraordinary lives and accomplishments, but they're filling their lives with empty trinkets because they have this God-shaped vacuum that only Christ can fill. And if Christ does not fill that vacuum, then a host of besetting urges replace that which is really central, that which is really important, and that's how these successful lives devolve.
Absolutely. Back to where we began, we're having a wisdom contest, and I think Jesus is the better way, and union with Christ says not only is he the better way, but he unites his life to yours, and he brings you along the way. It's a beautiful and it's a true picture of the goodness of God, that he, on this journey, he unites his life to ours and asks us to reset our horizon, that the horizon is now communion with him, that this becomes our highest ambition. To use the biblical language, I want to know Christ. I want to know the Christ that has already taken hold of me, Paul says. Not that I have already obtained this, but I press on to take hold of him who has already taken hold of me. That's one of the great pictures of the dynamic of union with Christ in the Bible.
You allude to this as well in your book, not allude, but I mean, you actually excavate this quite well. This whole idea of Paul saying, I want to know him and the fellowship of his sufferings, becoming like him in his death, and so somehow or other to attain to the resurrection of the dead. Explicate this idea of suffering a little bit.
Wow. Well, that was the shortest chapter in my book because it's really the longest idea. Christ is the prophecy of Christ in Isaiah. He is a man of suffering, well acquainted with grief. To know Christ is to know the man who suffered. His whole life was one perpetual crucifixion, one theologian put it. And suffering is integral to knowing Christ. It's integral both because that's who Jesus is. He is the man who suffered, and to know him is to suffer. But it's also integral in that this is one of the ways God uses to wean us off dependence on ourselves. So suffering works both ways. And Hank, I think a simple but profound way of capturing the essence of it is the crucifixion is not simply what happened to Jesus. The crucifixion is who Jesus is. And to be united with him is to be united with the crucified and resurrected Lord. And yet Paul says, I have been crucified with Christ and raised with him and seated with him in the heavenly places. But we, to experience that new life, we have to use language we're more familiar with. To enjoy Sunday, we have to go through Friday. We have to experience that crucifixion and that suffering. That's God's way.
We seem to have to skate around words today because the words have so much baggage associated to them. They become connotative as opposed to denotative. But we used to be able to talk about theosis or deification or divinization, but now we have to skate around those terms because the moment you use a word like deification, I mean, people, they come unglued.
If it is even a familiar word, it's a frightening word because it suggests something that people are very uncomfortable with. And I try to be clear in the book that no one in the Christian tradition, Catholic, Protestant, or Orthodox, no one has ever said that Christians become divine in the sense that they are just like God. No one has said that we become co-creators. we are always creatures. Let me put it like that. And yet, Jesus has forever hallowed what it means to be human. So we have this phrase, well, I'm only human, and yet, well, wow, Jesus shows you what it means to be human. To be fully human is to participate in God's own life.
Mm-hmm.
And again, back to the Protestant reformers, they weren't afraid of this language. Some of their followers have been, I mean, to the point that it's almost non-existent today. You don't hear too many Protestants talking about theosis or deification. And I would say, wow, we've lost something pretty important, not just to our tradition, we've lost something important to the biblical tradition, to what Jaroslav Pelikan called the great tradition. And we have to recover that and not be afraid of that mystery and understand that we're not betraying our tradition, we're honoring the best of our tradition.
Well, we've run out of time for today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. As thanks for your gift in support of the ongoing work of the Christian Research Institute, Hank Hanegraaff would like to send you the book Union with Christ, The Way to Know and Enjoy God by Pastor Rankin Wilburn. Just call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI. You can also write CRI at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina 28271. Or just visit online at equip.org. That's equip.org. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is funded solely by listeners like you. We're on the air because life and truth matter.
Truth matters, life matters more, details Hank Hanegraaff's personal pilgrimage from his long defense of truth to his discovery that life matters more. Essentially two books in one, Part 1 equips Christians to defend the essential truths of the historic Christian faith. Part 2 explains why truth is necessary, but hardly sufficient. That the map is not the territory, the menu is not the meal. We are created to experience life to the full through union with God in Christ. Is there more to the Christian life than what you are experiencing? Truth Matters, Life Matters More unveils the unexpected beauty of an authentic Christian life. To receive Truth Matters, Life Matters More for yourself or as a terrific gift to a friend or loved one, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches, 888-7000-CRI, or visit us online at equip.org.